And I'm still laughing. I'm just getting my stuff. Next thing I know, I turn around and he's just blah, 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 blah. I'm not paying attention. He javelins his pole into the freaking river. I'm like, what did you do that for? He's like, I ain't never going fishing again. So every time I see him now, I'm like, hey, if you're going to throw your pole in the lake, just give it to me first.
We need to get him one of those like... Welcome back to the Muddy River Tactical Podcast. This is episode 6, and we're going to be discussing inside the waistband holsters this week. As always, got Kevin, Brett, myself, your host of the show. And like I said, we're going to go over inside the waistband holsters, what's good about them, what we like, the way we make them, and what we think makes ours different. So before we get too far into that, Brett, you just pulled back in town. What did you do this weekend, and what kind of trouble did you get into?
I went on a little mini vacation down to Disney, Oklahoma on a side-by-side trip with me and the wife. No family, just me and the wife.
Was it all rock down there? Or was it?
Yep. Yep. Weather was fantastic for this time of year, about 75-ish. Just didn't break anything. Worked out.
That's the most important part. You didn't have the $800 repair bill and somehow got kid-free for the weekend, too?
Yep.
And the Ford made it that far.
Oh,
hey.
Hey, the Ford did good. Yeah. On the way home, I had a tailwind, so it pushed me all the way home.
So we got 4.5 miles a gallon all the way back from Oklahoma.
He broke 50 on the way home then.
The 270 made it no problem.
So that sounds like a good time. There's all sorts of trails down there, and it's like a big public area, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little small, quick story. It's... The government used to keep people off of it, like a park recreational area. And then there's a gentleman named Russ that sued because in the clause it actually said that this certain amount of land was the people's land and they got to choose what to do with it. Well, he won that case however many 20 years ago. I don't know the exact numbers, but he won the case, and it's been a off-road park ever since for rock bouncers, you know, Broncos, stuff like that. Now UTVs, because that's a big thing. So it's a real neat area. It's like a dam on the Grand Lake.
Okay.
And on the opposite side of that is, on the opposite side of the dam, it's got a lot of limestone rock that, you know, four-wheel drive vehicles climb up, and just a big trail area. So
that's pretty cool. They got camping and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's real cool.
Excellent. What do you do, Kevin? I hear about Zupu, and your wife tells me all the benefits of Zupu. So what's going on here?
My weekend turned out better than I thought when we were talking last Thursday. So my wife's been wanting a garden. Well, I finally, since we moved to the farm, she's got all these animals and the bobcats and foxes or whatever getting the chickens, which is all I really cared about was the chicken eggs. So we've gone through 3 sets of those and finally convinced her to get rid of the pig and everything. So we have no more quote-unquote farm petting zoo animals around. So she wants to do a garden, which is a win-win for me. So I tore down all the old makeshift fence to hold a pig in and plowed her up a garden. But last week when we were talking, she kind of gets ahead of herself, as you guys know. And she thought the soil would be terrible and blah, blah, blah. We live in the middle of an ag field. Like, farmers are farming this. They're not farming soil that won't grow nothing, first of all. But anyways, she had gone as far as getting online marketplace or something. She was going to get zoo poo, literally elephant crap from the zoo, and wanted me to take my truck and get a truckload of it in the bed. I'm like, not a chance in hell.
I think the Muddy River trip would have looked great with a heaping mound of elephant dung coming up the highway.
Smell like elephant crap for 2 weeks driving around town. But luckily, I got it tilled up. I'm like, look, it looks good. And Bob helped me on this because Bob was there. And, you know, she don't listen to me. Bob's like, oh, well, I think it looks good. So miraculously, I didn't have to go get zoo poo no more. So
well, and tell about a little better. Tell about how you got rid of your pigs. Your 16-year-old and his buddy are pig wranglers now.
Yeah, so a friend of ours' friend is who took the pig, he's got all sorts of different animals. So he's like, oh, yeah, I'll take the pig. So 16-year-olds normally can't do much on their own. So I figured I was going to have to help in this process somehow. I get home, I think it's Thursday night or I don't know, something like that. And they're sitting on a tub in the back of the truck, like a big, I don't know how many gallons that thing is. The big black water tub.
Like a 100-gallon Rubbermaid.
150-gallon or I don't know, whatever it is. Sitting on top of it. I'm like, what are you guys doing? They're like, we can't get off. We need a ratchet strap. Well, somehow they got the pig in that tub and lifted it up in the truck and flipped the tub over so he would stay in the bed of the pickup to get him 5 miles down the road. Well, so I'm like, okay, I'll go get your ratchet strap. Well, pretty soon, I turn and they're laughing. They're like riding this pig. The pig is literally walking with the tub on its back around the thing, and they're trying to hold it down. And both of them are 200 and something pounds.
Yeah, they're not small, yeah. Frail boys.
So they got 400 pounds on this tub, and this pig's carrying them around. So,
in the back of a pickup.
In the back of a pickup truck, yeah.
If you could link the video, it'd be hilarious. You should probably put a picture up of them on the tub.
Yeah, I'll put a picture of them getting bucked around. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, I didn't do much this weekend. I took my youngest out shed hunting. My oldest boy, he didn't want to go. He was stuck playing Call of Duty or whatever. So my youngest and I, we have some land up behind our house. Went and found a nice set of matched antlers up there. Walked about 2-4 miles, not a ton, but squirrels had already started getting them up there, kind of being city animals like they are. Other than that, they had their blue and gold banquet for scouts. So my oldest went on from Arrow of Light, or got his Arrow of Light award, and is going on to the Boy Scouts now. Youngest is going into, he just graduated from Bear, so I think it's maybe Weeblos. I don't know enough about the ranks, but he's moving on.
Way too long ago.
Oh, yeah. I mean. So in the midst of that, in their scouting, they learned all about, you know, trapping animals, and they watched videos. There's this kid named Kendall Gray, and he makes some pretty good YouTube videos about, he hunts and fishes and traps everything. Well, my youngest Easton's like, Dad, we got to trap something. And in my shed behind the house, I keep my bass boat up there. And the raccoons every winter get up inside the boat and they'll like open up the cabinets and like, you know, get out crappie jigs and just stuff you wouldn't think they'd be in. So the raccoons are in it, everything. So I was like, all right, we'll set the live trap. And, you know, it's like, what are we going to use for bait? He's like, we're going to use marshmallows and dog food. So load up the trap with marshmallows and dog food, and I'm like, we might catch it, we might not. And this morning, get up, and we got a big boar coon in the trap out in front of the house.
I'm sure he was happy to see it.
Oh, he was thrilled, and he was really thrilled because the boys opened up the door, and they were out prodding him before I could get out there. So
I'm poking him with a stick.
Oh, he's good and fired up. So they're like, Dad, what are we going to do? I was like, well, I'm hauling him up to conservation area and letting him go free out in the woods. I mean, they're like, no, we're going to let him go in the yard. What if he's got babies? I was like, all right, so we're going to let him go. So now I've got this riled up coon, and they're videotaping the whole thing. And if you've never tried to let a coon out of a live trap, their arms are pretty agile and long. So I've got on gloves, and this coon's trying to get me out of there. So I spent my morning wrestling a coon out of a live trap, and we let him go. You want to know where he went?
He's probably back in your boat by now.
Yeah, about 95 miles an hour up the hill into the shed. So that was the story of my coon encounter that lasted all of about an hour. So, yeah, that was our weekend, but let's get into topic of the day, which is our inside the waistband holsters, and we're going to kind of break these down in different segments. Now, this week we'll do inside, next week maybe outside, or, you know, we'll get through all of them as we go, but we're going to talk about what makes them good, why they're popular, and just the different features on them. By far and away, inside the waistband is the most popular holster we carry. We're not talking about leather today. We're just going to talk about the Kydex and what makes them good. So, Kevin, kind of for somebody that's never had an inside-the-waistband Kydex, kind of go over the basics of them.
So the basics of a Kydex holster is, like I said on a different episode, leather is kind of the starter point. It's for comfort. Kydex is most popular because it's an all-around good holster. It's got a small footprint. It gives you a lot of options for versatility as far as clips and claws, attachments, all different things. You can literally make these holsters adapt to you and your situation. And they're popular because of, on an inside-the-waist Kydex holster, you can literally wear that holster anywhere from appendix carry to 4 or 5 o'clock, or you can do a small of the back carry if you choose, which we'll get into here in a little bit. I don't necessarily promote small of the back carry, but it is possible with the right setup. But the main thing is, like, the if you go into the clip options, you know, the main thing about Kydex is there's tons of options. So it's a 100% Kydex shell, 0.080 Kydex, which is kind of the industry standard. There's some places that use 6.0, which is way too thin, way too fragile, brittle. They do it because it's cheaper. There's a few places that use 9.3, which is kind of overkill, and you start losing comfort pretty quickly. That way, it just makes it way too stiff of a holster. So ours is 080. It's just right in the middle. It's kind of proven itself over the years as far as durability and holding up while not getting bulky. They come with all sweat shields on them. So those not familiar with a sweat shield, it's the back piece that goes against your skin. It just gives a barrier between the gun and your skin. But it also greatly aids in reholstering your gun. If you have a holster without a sweat shield, you got to go straight in, whereas you can put a gun in and kind of guide itself down. So it's as good as for reholstering as it is protection.
It's so it's kind of like a ramp that just guides it straight in.
A way, yes. It kind of gives it both of those together. But the main options to start is you got your colors, and I won't get into all those. We got infused Kydex, which Kyle can hold up over there. We can put any patterns on it. We do all of that in-house, but it's supplemented into the Kydex, so it's not something that it's not going to scratch off. It's not like a sticker on there.
And a lot of companies do that. They print right on the outside. So with
A lot of them are using UV printers, which before we started, and well before you were here, I mean, this was a couple of years ago, me and Brett were trying to figure out how they did it, because there's all sorts of ways to do it. There's a lot of companies on the market that are, it's all sublimation, but they're calling it infusion. All in honesty, that's a way to, it is infusing itself into there, but they're using that so that they don't call it sublimation, so everybody else figures out how to do it.
Yeah, but it's kind of like we talked about earlier when we were having an offline discussion about, you can tell somebody the ingredients for a Burger King Whopper, but that doesn't mean they're going to make the Whopper in the right order.
Yeah, and that's the good thing about us is we're super transparent. We're one of those companies that are transparent about it. But for some companies that, you know, they don't make holsters, all they do is print Kydex. To them, that's a liability towards their business. So for us, I mean, we're doing it for ourselves. It doesn't, we're cutting out the middleman, and it wasn't even the price that we were paying for it. It was the lead time, being able to do custom stuff.
Oh, yeah. COVID didn't help us on that at all.
Yeah, I mean, during COVID, there's times where, you know, we'd get an order for something, or you'd try to have to stock a whole bunch of, like, Ninja Turtles.
Right.
Super cool. We sell them, but are you going to want to stock 100 sheets of this? No. But if you don't, you're going to be waiting 4 or 5 weeks. So if a customer does order it, then you can't get it. So by doing it in-house, we're literally doing it as they're getting ordered. So that's super cool.
And it is funny to see, like, some of our patterns, like the tactical Grinch here. We drew that up in the middle of last summer, put it out around Christmas time. And I'm not going to name the other company that miraculously had one identical to it.
They all pop up.
And so it's funny. Like, I actually bought one of the shirts that had the knockoff of it on there, because it's like, man, they like my design enough to make it. So, you know, more power to you.
Yeah, it's the old monkey see, monkey do. I mean, I guess we're kind of the same way, and some of the prints that we still do today are a different version of prints we bought years ago. Mm-hmm. It's just what's popular and what people want, but I think it's all cool. It's inside the waist. Do you need it? No, but you can customize it to yourself. But no matter what, whether you get the specialty prints, carbon fiber, or the flat colors, a common question we get all the time is it's all the same material. So the carbon fiber one is not carbon fiber reinforced or stronger. It doesn't affect any of that. It's all the exact same material.
The only thing I've noticed, and I could be wrong on this, it seems like the carbon fiber's got, I don't want to call it like more of a protective finish, but it's like a little bit smoother. Like it wipes off like almost like a gloss finish over the top more than the...
Sometimes, yes. And I don't know exactly, because like the carbon fiber, we just buy it. It's just like buying regular flat sheets of Kydex like we use everything else. I'm sure there's some type of process. My guess is it's no different than like the sublimation of this. We have to, it's heated for that to sublimate into that. I'm assuming the carbon fiber look is the same type of way. So I'm guessing it's off of their presses or something in their process.
That shine may make it look like more carbon fiber too. And so they're intentionally adding that shine to it.
Yeah, it may. Carbon fiber does feel a little bit smoother for whatever reason. So we got people that'll buy a carbon fiber, not because they want the look, but because it feels a little bit smoother. There's a couple gun shops across the country that we sell holsters to that buy only carbon fiber for that reason. So that's the material. And the common questions with it as far as the thickness and durability of different things and if it's actually different. Then your first option you really come to other than the color is the clips. We got all different clips you can choose from. We got the standard clip, a monoblock clip, or a tuckable clip. They're all great for different purposes. I would say the most common is a standard clip. If you're a person that wears a belt, which you absolutely should if you're carrying, unless you're using an Ulti clip. The Ulti clip is made to go direct to fabric, but wearing a belt's always going to reinforce that gun and hold it up better for you.
And for those people watching at home, you can see Brett's got one of the standard clips there. A lot of people, like I hear Sarah describing it as like a money clip style, but
yeah.
It's the plastic, the standard clips, got our Muddy River logo engraved on it.
Yeah.
Pretty industry standard
It's an industry standard. And there for a while there was, these are the ones that, we don't make these clips. It's the same, every other holster company buys them. There was some that were overseas for a while. We've never carried them, but there is knockoffs of these all the time. So just be aware of that if you're looking anywhere. They may look the same, but they're not. All of these clips are all made in the United States right here, so they're way stronger. And we've had samples of the other one. And like if you see this, how it springs back. Remember those other ones? They were made somewhere else, but after a while, they would form that way. So if you held it up that way, it would start not touching here and lose its like the spring to it. So. But overall, that comes in the price of the holster. So when you see like $59.99 is where inside Kydex holsters start, that's in, with this clip included on it. If you go to upgrade, and this is inch and a half belts, by the way. I kind of forgot to put that. It's inch and a half belts, and you can adjust the cant. So there's two holes here, so you can adjust the cant up to 15 degrees on that one.
And those have set ride heights. So
it's set ride heights, and we get the question sometimes about why we don't offer adjustable ride height for this style clip. And the reason is we really don't want or promote you burying your gun in your pants. There's people that want to put the clip down and make that gun ride super low. I get it for certain situations. From a standpoint of safety and concealed carry and being able to use your pistol, you're at a huge disadvantage. So by doing this, we just keep people from doing that and making a bad choice.
And when we're engineering these molds, like I said, we engineer all of our molds in-house. So we're picking the right height where the grip of the pistol is at the proper level for a belt, where it's easy to draw, you know, not too high, not too low. So
And with the addition of optics being so prevalent nowadays, if you bury this any up higher, which would put the gun lower, your pants right across the optic, which then isn't ideal at all either.
And also the holes that we use for retention, we use them for the claw as well, which we will get into. But if you get that clip too far off, then your claw's not going to line up with the belt as well.
Correct. So I'd say that's the most common, probably mostly because it's included in the price and a lot of people don't know exactly what they want. So, and I'll even tell them, start with that and see how it goes. And if you want to change, that's the beauty of all of our new inside holsters, being able to change. It's got the holes down here for the tuckable. You can put the monoblock. You can put any of these clips we're talking about on this holster. So if this doesn't work for you, it's as easy as buying a clip instead of buying a whole bunch of stuff and then using what came with it. It's just kind of the process of elimination. The next, I'd say next step up would be the DCC, which is discrete carry monoblock. So it's got... It's the same type of thing, but it's a metal clip. Instead of the standard clip's polymer injected, the mono block is metal. So it fits 1.5 belts as well. You still get the adjustability of the cant on the holes in the holster. Where the mono block really shines, I would say, is because it's a dual spring clip. Like, Kyle, if you'll hold that up to the camera. Yeah, you bet.
So we got
each side springs independently. So if you, like, your gun rotates or pants rotate or whatever for whatever reason, in theory, that one is way harder to get off your belt in a situation of, like, normal moving and stuff. It's not harder to get off your belt just taking it off because you put both your fingers. But under, like, a normal moving situation, not trying to get it off, it people find it to be more secure just because of the dual springs. The one thing that I will say about it, though, is because it's metal, it's a little rougher on, like, your belt's finish and stuff. So people that have bought it and use it with, like, a nice dress belt or something, it may or may not, but the chances of it scratching are way higher.
And I've heard people, and we don't recommend using it without a belt, but some people, you can't control what they do. I've heard people call and say, hey, this thing's tearing up my joggers or my yoga pants. Yeah. But, you know,
and a lot of that, like what you're saying right there, is why we're doing this podcast and why we're doing especially this episode and going in deep and going to break all these products down, because they don't know any different. Like, they see UltiClip, and instead of reading and really understanding what it does, they just think, they look and go, oh, that looks right, and order it. So that's what they're using. So I will say, any of the belts we're talking about, or any of the clips we're talking about, other than the UltiClip, you should be wearing a belt, without a doubt.
Perfect. So that kind of leads us to our next of the metal clips. And next is the UltiClip. Now, these will have the adjustable ride height, because we've got multiple hole preps for adjustable ride height in there. And as you can see, the clip itself has got multiple holes in, like, a long channel. So you can really adjust these to your liking. But
ride height wise.
Ride height wise.
You'll lose the cant adjustability, though.
And these you do not need a belt on.
So, no, they're made to wear direct to fabric. So that clip on top, Kyle, if you spring it open, it's more or less a stiff suspender clip. Like, everybody knows suspender clips. Mm-hmm. It's a stiff version of that that goes direct to fabric. It's not made to go to any belt. Even if you got a thin belt, it's not made to do that. It's made to go to fabric. So by doing that, what I tell people is I still suggest a belt, because you could put that holster on and just say you're wearing jeans. Clip that UltiClip to the jeans and have your belt go over it. It's a good alternative for those that aren't going to wear a belt, where they don't draw their whole holster with their gun.
Which can be, you know, and depending on how tight or loose you like the retention on your holster, that could be a real issue. And even, you know, when we're making them in the shop, that's why we use the real guns, because
100%.
You know, you want it to come out smoothly without falling out, but you don't want it, you know, so loose it's going to fall out, you know, in daily activity.
And that's one thing, nothing against the UltiClip. It does great for its purpose. But if you're going to carry in, like, gym shorts or joggers or whatever the common thing is now, where everybody's wearing sweatpants type of thing, with a UltiClip, your holster is only as secure as your pants. So don't expect that UltiClip's going to hold your pants. But if when you go to draw and your pants come up a foot, well, everything's coming up that far. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not a fix. It doesn't fix the point of not having a belt or something to secure it to. It fixes the issue of keeping it there.
Yeah, and you don't want to look like Steve Urkel in a gunfight.
Exactly. Yeah, you have your pants up like this, and you got a wedgie, and you can't get your gun out.
All I can think is, did I do that?
That would be a great... have Brett do it and draw like that with a wedgie. Can you imagine that as a good promo video?
Why do I got to be the guinea pig?
And we take it one further. We get him suspenders and we go get that Mini Cooper, and he'd have like the Urkel car with the suspenders, and we're onto something.
Hey, you are the face of the local company.
Hey, I think if we get 1,000 likes on this video, Brett will do it. Brett said yes.
I would do it anyways. Okay, mean, let's be honest. Well, yeah, I get picked on all the time.
We got to do it fine. For the likes, Brett. You got to give the people what they want.
Yeah, 1,000 likes.
So, just to reiterate that clip, you do have the adjustability of going up and down ride height, but you do not have cant adjustment.
And that's going to lead into the next, and I don't want to call them vertical clips, but they kind of are. They're single vertical blocks. You got the tuckable over there. So, would be the tuckable. And that's, we talked about last episode, is designed to wear with your shirt tucked in, which, again, if you're going to do it, make sure you train that way. But it kind of sits off the holster a little bit as well. We got spacers in there. So is that where the shirt tucks in between the back of the clip and the holster?
So this is the most misunderstood clip on the market, in my opinion, because you say tuckable and everybody thinks it's just because it's thin. Well, that's part of it, but this gap here, and it's not much because you don't want a huge gap here because then that just adds bulk this way for comfort and everything else. But that gap there, when you put this on your pants, this goes over your pants and your belt and clips down. Your shirt will tuck into this gap, which allows nothing to show but that clip.
Okay.
So, and there's so many things that have clips on them nowadays. You know, cell phones and pocket knife. I mean, everything you can think of has clips and whatever. So, if you have the body type to pull off tucking in gun and concealing it, which like we said on another episode, not a ton of people do, but if you do, this is a great option and it allows you to do that.
And that one takes a little bit bigger belt, correct?
Yeah, so this one will work with belts up to 1.75 inches, which all of our belts are 1.5 inches, and I think that's plenty for most scenarios. The one thing with this clip, though, the one downside to me is, which I don't use this clip because I don't got the body to pull off tucking in my shirt to conceal it anyways. But with this clip being that much narrower, you can see how much narrower it is.
Yeah.
This will rock more than what this will.
And for the people, I just noticed that while you're holding it with the old clip, that's a claw attachment on there, which
this we will get in. This is a claw. That's something different. Okay. But this narrow clip to that, if you something pushes against it, it's easier for this to rock than this to rock.
Sure. Yeah, it gives you a little wider footprint and...
Yes, so it's just a different style. I would say if I was going to say what the least popular clip would be, it would be the tuckable clip. Just because, like I said, in reality, the amount of people, if you take 100 people, there may be one guy that can pull off tucking in his shirt to conceal it.
Sure.
It's just very few. So nothing wrong with the clip. It's just an application that's more specialized than the rest of them. Whereas a standard clip is good for anywhere you want to put it. The mono block is as well. So is the ulti clip.
And go ahead, Brett.
And once again, one holster, if you buy this one turtle holster right here, will take all four clips if you want to buy all individual clips. So you can use every option we have with that one holster now.
And for those that have been customers for a long time, that's new in the last year.
Since I started, about the last year.
Because before we would only mold it with one or the other because we didn't have Kyle here. Kyle's engineering and we're not doing our own molds. We were relying on other people's molds before. Well, now we can incorporate all of that and put these holes in here without affecting anything else. All of the others on the market up until we created our own, it affected it greatly. Like this would be raised too high. So if you had a standard clip, these holes, it'd make your belt clip sit like that all the time. It was just never ideal. So that's why we didn't do it in the past. And that's the beauty of CNC machines and somebody that's smart enough to run the computer stuff to engineer what we want.
And that's kind of part of the learning curve that we had is figuring out what the proper height for these attachment points needs to be off of the holster so they fit tight, but you know, there's enough room where, you know, the back of the Chicago screws aren't rubbing against the finish of your gun. So we want them to be tight, but not so tight where it's ever going to affect anything. So, when you go into the lead time on some of the new holsters that come out and, you know, it's a couple of weeks for, you know, a light bearing or something new, there's more than just scanning the gun and going into it. We got to make it. We got to run tests, you know, make sure everything's good before we send it out to you.
Well, and what they don't realize, especially talking about new products, like all this morning before now, we're working on a new product that'll be in the next month or so, but it's months and months and months of trial and error on just one model. And then you take what you learned off that one model to different guns, then you learn other stuff. So that's how these are as well. What what tolerance is on one gun is not all of them. So every time we make a mold, it's 4 or 5 molds to make one perfect. Because until it's right, we're not going to send it out.
For sure. Yeah, and then, you know, when you talk about new products, we got people out testing them in the field and letting us know, hey, this point isn't real comfortable. If this could come off, that'd be great. Or, hey, if you guys put this on there instead, it'd be a lot better.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of doing our own molds and trim passes and everything ourselves as well, is because these holsters are super versatile. So you'll get the guy that is appendix carrying this. You'll get the guy that's carrying it at 4 or 5 o'clock. We try to make it as streamlined and useful in all scenarios where you're not limited to one or the other.
And the thing I like too, and you know, I like them because I work on the engineering side of them, but you know, obviously we look at other stuff out on the market and you know what other people are doing and how we can improve upon it. And you know, some of the stuff like we talked about before, everybody's got click retention, everybody's got adjustable retention. It's Kydex, it's kind of the industry standard. All of ours have that.
The fit's different.
The fit is different. You know, you can have two and, you know, the fit's going to be drastically different. But some of the stuff we do is you see a lot of them and they have straight 45-degree hard corners edges. And especially like up here, then this little curve might not look like a lot, but when you go to draw your pistol and it's not hitting on the inside of your thumb because you got a straight piece coming across here, it makes a difference on how comfortable it is. Same thing, our rounded corners here on the edge, they're not digging into you. They're not imprinting as bad. If you look down towards the end, how it's all tapered down towards the muzzle, well, you don't have a flat cutoff. Less imprinting when you're sitting there. That's not digging into you.
Yeah, you don't want any hard edges anywhere because it's not making it any comfort at all.
Yeah, it's kind of like the stealth fighter technology, reducing radar profile. You know, well, we're reducing anything. We're trying to make this as round as it can be, you know, turtle shell kind of, you know, everything curved where nothing really pokes out. There's no sharp edges on it.
Zero pressure points is basically what you're trying to create there.
Exactly. And on this one, I don't know how well the camera can pick it up, but you know, a lot of companies too, they don't buff the edges of them. So they don't have that nice mirrored finish on there. Kevin, I don't know if yours will show it off better being on that carbon fiber or not. But
that's one of those things that's hard to, on camera, you'll probably never get it, but in person, you can tell the difference for sure. We should have brought one that wasn't buffed at all, and you could tell, which a lot of companies, like we talked about, don't buff them. And it's not, to me, it's just a cosmetic thing. Forget us being part of the company. If I was to order anything, and you go spend whatever amount of money it is, I mean, the $40 holster may be a lot to somebody, or the $100. Whatever you spend, you want to take pride in what you bought. You know, if you go spend $100 on a Ninja Turtle holster and it's not buffed, then it's like, well, you know, before it don't matter how good it fits, you get the first impression of they half-assed it.
And the thing that, you know, when we were first engineering these molds, took me the longest to kind of get dialed in. And you can probably vouch to this. What was the one thing on my trim pass that we adjusted every time? It was right where your finger hits on the inside when you're drawing it. And having that step up, you know, not to get too far into the secret sauce, but you want to cover the trigger guard enough to eliminate rock when you're making them. But it's got to come in at the right angle to still cover the safety where you're not, or the mag release, I'm sorry, where you're not kicking out mags when you're sitting down, but come in where your finger doesn't rub. So it's not just a line for a reason.
It's a super fine line there, because what a lot of them are doing, or on their scans, are just taking where the bottom of that sweat shield is and cutting it in half. So if you look at the gun in the holster, you can see half of the bottom of that trigger guard, not sweat shield, the trigger guard. Well, the problem with that is, and it's all exposed, it's going to make the gun rock. It's just a whole bunch of problems, but they're doing it because that's the easy way to do it compared to adjusting the trim pass out. I mean, Kyle knows he does it all the time, but we'll adjust the trim pass 10 times before it's right.
Oh, all the time. And that's after months and months of doing it and, you know, pretty much knowing where it's at, and it's still not right. So, I mean, we may be moving it thousands of an inch to get it, you know, as far out as we can, but still where it's going to be comfortable for you to wear.
Absolutely.
All right. So another thing we got, suppressor height sights. We engineer as well as the optics, suppressor height sights, and all of our holsters. So we do that so the people down the road, if they add suppressor height sights, they don't have to buy another holster. If they decide they want to run an optic later, they can use their same holster. We try and think of things that the customer hasn't got yet that they may add, where we can keep them, the retention the same, whether the firearm's got it or not, but just give them that versatility down the road where you don't end up with a drawer of holsters for your new gun.
Yeah, neither one of those affect anything as far as comfort or anything of the holster. I mean, the extra quarter inch on the sight channel there, you would never know. If we didn't tell you that would fit tall sights, nobody would even think about it.
For sure.
You know, it's minute differences, but our end goal is make the best holster possible and not make you have to. We want you to come back and buy from us, but come back and buy from us for the right reasons, not because we sold you something that you can't use no more now.
Yeah.
Because of an optic or something. Well, so that doesn't mean, oh, I bought a new gun. You know, we're talking about things that we can control.
And if you're going to go down the road of like car analogy, we're giving you the Platinum King Ranch Edition F-150 for the base model F-150 price. Every option we can put on there comes standard. You know, we're not trying to upsell you. We're not, you know, trying to get every nickel and dime we can. We want to make them the best that they can be.
Yeah, I mean, there's options for sure. Like the clip options can be more money. The monoblock and ulti-clip are more money just because
they cost us
that much more money. The claw's an option. But as far as a base holster, you know, some people need the claw and some don't. So we didn't want to price it with, like you see some companies on the market that won't sell them without a claw. Well, that's not fair to the guys that don't use a claw, because then they're paying for it when they don't need it. We want to sell you what you need, not what is the most profitable. If we wanted to sell what the most profitable was, we wouldn't offer options. We'd put the one clip we wanted to sell and the claw on every one of them and tell you that's what it is.
And same thing with our specialty patterns. Those are a little bit more, but we have to pay to sublimate them. We got to pay somebody to, you know, do the work.
By the time, I mean, the specialty patterns are what, 12, 13 bucks, 14 bucks, whatever they are. I don't even remember what they are off my top of my head. Less than $15, we have that much in it, because we got to print the sheets. We got to press it. We got to pay somebody to do that. You know, it's not a easy thing. I shouldn't say it's not an easy thing. We can do it, but it's not as simple as it costs 50 cents to do it. I mean, it cost us that much more to do it. So by going this route, you're paying more money for something personalized to you. It's not a benefit to us. To us, if we wanted to be the most profitable, we'd do flat black holsters and nothing else, because then there'd be no variance into anything.
Yeah, and down the road, it may be something too where we can offer some more, you know, not personalized. I don't know if we'll ever get to a point where we can do one-offs and everything, because then you're getting into, you know, your graphic arts time and, you know, the time it takes to draw and design everything. But, you know, if there's sheriff's departments or, you know, big companies that are going to order 40 or 50, we could probably accommodate something like that, I'm sure.
Yeah, we can do stuff like that. It's just what they want and what makes sense. But
I have a question that a customer might ask for the left-handed guys out there.
Okay.
How come your holster doesn't have, or our holster doesn't have, the option of left hand or right hand in the same holster? Because you'll see more than half the companies, that's what they're doing now.
Okay, the companies are doing that because mold costs are expensive, whether you're a company buying molds or building them like we do. Either way, it's an expensive proposition. So instead of buying a left and right hand mold, they're trying to use one and make it a universal holster.
Now, they won't be able to have a sweat shield on those, right? Or do they use the same jig both ways?
And most of them that I've seen have either not had a sweat shield or had a sweat shield on both sides.
Okay.
Good. Next question is it bulkier if you do have it on both sides?
It's way bulkier, which is why we don't do it. We've been asked to do it, and we just refuse to do it. It's kind of like the same thing as people that want an inside and an outside holster. Well, there's no good way to make a perfect holster both ways. So in our opinion, no matter what you're doing, you're half-assing one or the other, or giving parts of it away to make it work the other way. And we just don't do that.
I just didn't want to exclude you left-handed guys out there.
Now, I will say all of our models, though, are modeled for ambidextrous safeties and ambidextrous mag releases. Okay. Whether it's got it or not.
That's a good question.
Yeah. I engineer them into all of them. So they're a clone copy on either side. So you may get it and be like, oh, well, this has got this channel here. Well, somebody may order one that's got it added on that side. So,
well, that's a good point, because also I'm left-handed. That's why Brett was asking that question. But I've known a lot of guys that don't switch their mag releases that are left-handed and won't swap the mag release, whether it's because that's how they grew up and that's how they've always shot or whatever their reasoning is. They don't swap it, or, as bad as it sounds, they don't train like we suggest they do and don't realize even the point of the mag release other than drop it out. And, you know, they don't realize mag changes and stuff. So they'll be left-handed and never swap the mag. So if we didn't make the molds fit both ways, that left-handed shooter would get it and be like, well, hell, my mag releases, because it's not, well, it's because he didn't swap it. And that's not, I ain't saying right or wrong. I mean, as I guess I kind of am. You should swap it. But
that kind of goes to Kyle's job to show us that just the difference between left and right hand, there's a lot of thinking points you have to remember. Like, you know, like you said, the mag release, the ambidextrous safeties, whether they have them or not, because customers change their own guns all the time.
And another thing, and I don't know a specific company, I wouldn't bring them up even if I did, but when you're modeling these things, like that 92, Beretta 92 we were talking about earlier, they've got a safety on the side. Well, when it clicks up, you got to have a position for it with on and off safety. So you've got to have a channel that will accept the safety in either position where it doesn't click it on or off.
Yeah, you got to have it both ways, because there's a certain amount of those double action, single action guns that some guys will carry cocked and locked where they'll want it with the safety on. And then there'll be the guys that don't, and like, well, I want it with the safety off. So we just mold it so you can have the safety in either direction and let you decide what
so
you want.
So kind of a secret question is, so if you're doing the 92s right now, do you know or have you looked at yet the 92i or XI that has the frame safety compared to the slide safety?
Yeah, and actually, for people looking, we have a video where you just put out. It's actually, well, this is going to air later, so it's going to be a week old by the time this episode comes out.
See a little sneak peek.
There's a gun review that we did on it today, and we talked about the XI, and it's got the aluminum versus the steel, so it's lighter, and, you know, a little heavier than polymer, but lighter than all steel. But
that safety position is completely different and completely better than the old 92s.
Yep. Yep. All right. Do you want to talk about the claw for a minute? I know we kind of briefly touched on it.
Yep. So can you give me that other?
Oh, yeah. You bet.
So on the claw, it's an option. It's an add-on option. What I would tell you is the claw is great for concealment. The whole purpose of a claw is, you can imagine this in clipped over your pants. This is inside of your pants. It rides against the inside of your pants at your belt line. So you can imagine your pants and your belt are riding against here, which instead of, if this wasn't here, all the pressure would be up this one clip right here. Whereas with this claw here, it makes the whole holster, because this is going to contour your body, it pulls the grip into your body by pulling this in.
Yep.
So what that does is, if you look at 9 out of 10 people, what is hard for them to conceal is the grip of the gun. The, you know, gun's only an inch wide, it's not a problem there. It's the grip sticking out on the side of your body or whatever that will print through your shirt.
And pretty common, just like that 92X we were talking about when we were talking about it earlier. It's only 1.3 wide, but the grip's an inch and a half, almost 1.5 something.
Depending on your body shape and a lot of variables, it doesn't take a lot of grip to be hard to conceal for some people. So this eliminates that by rotating the whole holster. Instead of putting one point of contact here, it puts the other point of contact to make the whole thing contour your belt, which is contouring your body. The claw comes in two versions. So this is the straight one, which will be on light bearing holsters. Since on a light bearing holster, the screws already have to be out here, we don't want to make it wider than it has to be. So that's why this one's straight. This one is the standard claw, like all non-light bearings. It just curves out around and then goes, because if you put the claw straight up from here, it's not out far enough to really benefit turning. If you're turning from here, it's not doing much compared to turning from there.
And they come with different inserts, a big one and a small one. Yeah, depends on how much you want to turn it in.
Both of these have the small ones. It's not much difference. It's what, maybe an eighth of an inch?
At most.
It's not a huge difference.
You had one laying there.
I think I dropped it earlier.
Oh, okay.
But there is two different sizes, so all you got to do is take out this screw.
I'll grab it.
And pop it in there, which lets you change that. With the taller one, it just pulls that grip into your body more because it's putting more pressure. So the claw is greatly beneficial. I highly, highly suggest it with anything. You don't want it on a pocket-sized pistol, LCP, stuff like that. They don't work, first of all, because this is longer than the barrel, so then you can't get in to grab your gun is the first thing. Second of all, when the grip is 2 inches long, you don't need help concealing the grip anyway, so you're wasting $10.
Yeah, and when he says it'll get in the way, we attach them in these retention holes, so it does not affect the retention of the holster at all. We adjust them with them in there. And if you decide you don't want it later, you can take it off and still use the same retention holes.
Shorter hardware, yes.
Shorter hardware. But on the shorter pistols, when the barrel's only this long, well, we have to have the holes here. So if you're lined up, you know, it's going to be way up into the grip.
Puts the claw up into the grip.
Yeah, there's no way to get your finger in there. So we get some people that want them on there, and then we end up, you know, having to call them and let them know it's really not an option. If you want it, I guess you can put it on there, but it's, you know, it's going to be a disservice to you by doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that goes back to making sure we give people what they need instead of what they maybe think they want. Because to us, we don't want you spending $10 on something if you're not going to use it or it's not benefiting you. Because at the end of the day, that doesn't help you.
And it speaks to our customer service, too, because we're looking at every one of these orders, and we're having Sarah, in most cases, take the time out of her day to call these people to make sure they get a really good experience, where a lot of companies wouldn't do that. They're going to send it, put it on there, and say, here you go, that's what you asked for, sorry.
We don't want to sell you 5 holsters for one gun. We want to sell you a holster for every gun you ever buy. And the only way to do that is by taking care of people and doing things the right way.
And those claws on our holsters, they're engineered to work at what we'd call our standard ride height. So if you start adjusting like your Ulta clip up and down a bunch, it may or may not work as well. It should still grab, but it may not be as effective.
It's for standard ride height. And then the other key part about the claw is it's good for zero cant applications. Like I get the question all the time is, when should I use a claw and when shouldn't I? And to me, it's really made for appendix carry, but it can be used at 4 or 5 o'clock. It's the exact same principle. The difference is how much cant you have. Most people that carry at 4 o'clock adjust to 15 degree cant. So it pulls the grip up like that, where the claw's useless at that point because it's above your pant line.
It's in your way, yeah.
Plus, with your grip up like that at 15 degrees, it takes away the need for the claw because it naturally puts it not printing as much. So if you're going to carry anywhere at zero cant, which is straight up and down, the claw is beneficial for sure.
That makes a lot of sense. Do you guys have anything else you want to add about inside the waistband holsters? Anything we glossed over? I feel like we kind of gave a pretty good...
A little bit on the light-bearing side of it.
Yeah.
What type of options can you think of that off the top of your head, or is that going to be something?
As far as what, lights? Or
yeah.
We're adding lights all the time, mainly Streamlight, O-Light, Surefire. We get a lot of requests for, well, the new Sig Light, the Foxtrot 2. We got tons of people asking about that, so we got that on the X Macros and Legions now. Some of the less popular lights we're also going to start doing, which in the past we never could because of not engineering our own holsters. But like if you get on Amazon, like Nightstick is one of them. I think we have a couple
in the shop.
Nightstick and a couple other brands. We're going to make holsters for those too, just because that's what some people want. And for us, it's not a stretch anymore because we're modeling them ourselves. We already, just in this short time, I think have a list of light-bearing options that is bigger than most people's already.
I would say, yeah, because I know we do the TLR 6s, 7s, 8s, with the subs are on the 7s.
TLR 1.
Surefire X300, Olight Balders, Valkyries, Sig Foxtrots. Am I forgetting any?
You mentioned the list real quick. How can somebody send you an option for them to put on that list?
Yeah, so if you go to any of our light-bearing holsters and there's something that you don't have on there, or that we don't have on there, you can send us an email to support@muddyrivertactical.com, and just in the subject line, just put holster request and email us the exact setup you have, gun and light. That doesn't mean we'll add it to the list tomorrow, but if we get enough requests for something that we can justify it, we absolutely will, because this is a long-term thing for us. You know, we're not looking to add one thing and never sell it again. If it's something that's going to sell, we will gladly add it.
And what we do is, you know, we get the new lights in, we model them and make a model of the light specifically, not just for the gun. So it gives that level of retention, and retention's always tough on a light because you got buttons in different places and stuff like that. So I wouldn't say there's no retention on light, but it's more through a screw than a set click retention.
Yeah. So on light bearing versions, which is what this is, which I'm glad Brett brought that up, retention is completely different on light bearing holster than a non-light bearing holster. A traditional holster, non-light bearing, all retention is on the trigger guard. That's how you get that click in retention of what Kydex is known for. When you go to add a light, you got to think the widest part of that light's down here at the bottom. It has to be that wide the whole way up so that it goes down into the holster. Well, with it being that wide so that you can put your gun in the holster, you physically, no matter how good an engineer you are, you can't put retention on the trigger guard when a light has to go through it.
Yep.
It's just physics and how stuff works. That's not something you can engineer.
And there are some lights that I can engineer retention into, like the Surefire X300. I've got a spot in there that we grab, and it almost gives you, I won't say it gives you click retention because I don't want to guarantee that to people, but it's as close as you can get.
Yeah, some lights are more conductive to caring about the design of them for holstering than some are just worried about the light. Like some of these lights we see that most of the problem that I see with like cheaper lights a lot of times that people bring in the gun shop and what holster's made for is if it's got like a laser or something under it and say the gun's this wide and your trigger guard ends here, that light sticks this far out. What I tell people all the time is we can make it, but there's no good way to make it because all of this, the widest part of the light out here, you have to have that channel. Your gun's going to rock in that holster no matter what you do.
I'm glad you say that because that's the hardest thing for me trying to engineer. You've got a skinny gun and they put a fat, you know, TLR1 on it.
You're going to two opposites and it makes it really hard. So overall, the retention on any light-bearing holster is going to be on the light. It's not going to be the same click-in retention. It's still got retention and it's not going anywhere. But the click-in retention is what you get off of a trigger guard. And that's just not humanly possible on a light-bearing holster.
So speaking of that exact moment, the biggest question I get almost daily for a light-bearing holster, will it work without the light?
It will not.
It will not. And it's the exact same thing you were just talking about. There's no longer a channel that the gun will fit in.
Yeah, and if you look here down this, so only up to here is the gun. Down here is the light. All of this is still here. So without that light here, that whole gun's going, it's just flopping around in the holster.
And just as kind of a buyer's guide from somebody that engineers holsters for them, try and get what I would call an appropriate size light. Just because, you know, the X300 may be the biggest light out there, if you got a really small FN reflex or some, you know, small gun, you got to think too how far that light's going to stick out past the end of your barrel. It's probably not going to holster as well if that's what you're using it for. So I would urge people to maybe get something, you know, comparable to the size of their gun as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And lights are getting better and better and smaller, which is a good thing. But no matter what you do, I mean, you can look at these are the same size guns, light or no light. No matter how good you engineer it, they're going to be bulkier. So don't put a light on it thinking that the holster is not going to be bulkier. The light makes the gun bulkier, so the holster has to be bulkier. So just keep that in mind for guys that are more inside the waist than outside. But inside the waist, they put a light on. They're like, oh, yeah, I carry this comfortably already, but they don't realize the whole dynamics of the whole holster have to change to get a light in there.
Yeah, you can add 2 inches easy.
Yeah, easily. That holster. Yeah. Because the normal retention holes here are where the light would be. So now they have to go outside the light.
And, yeah, I mean, we'll talk secret sauce. Those holes, they have to be a half inch outside of the bottom of it just to make our hardware fit. Any closer than that, the screws right up on the bottom of it. And so... However, that is, add another half inch immediately, and there's nothing we can do to get that closer. And then, so you got a half inch out. Well, then you got to have enough to support the outside of your screw where it doesn't just break out. So,
and then you make it even more complicated. That top screw has to be where it gives you retention.
Right.
Without too much retention. Because if you put it too close to the trigger guard, then it's got way too much retention. If you put it down too far, it doesn't. And then it puts your claw where the claw don't work.
Yeah, it's really like juggling when you're making them, because you put one piece in there, like, man, that thing looks great, and it measures here, and then you go to make it, and you're like, ah.
Well, I remember that the funniest part about that is you've always known about guns, but you never really, until you started here, knew a lot about the holsters and what goes into it. I mean, you have enough engineering background where once it's explained to you, it's not a problem, but you'd, oh, yeah, this mold's great, and you'd bring it to my office. We're ready to sell it, and I'm like, well, hell, the hand hits the claw, this, that, and you just look puzzled and like, remember all the days he looked defeated on his face? Like, man.
The best one is the one time he brought me in the revolver, the very first revolver holster. It looked like a toy. I'm like, and I looked at Kyle and I was like, it probably works perfect. But the truth is we can't send it out the door looking like
it. It did look like, once you said it, I was like, this looks like a freaking water pistol.
Yeah, it just looks like a water pistol.
I'd worked on this damn thing for like two days.
You don't realize just the aesthetics alone will affect what we do every day and on a daily basis.
Well, and that's what the funny part about that is, just we were talking about it earlier today. The new holster we're working on that will be in the next month or so.
Go ahead and tell them what it is.
So we are going to have a dedicated appendix holster. Some call it sidecar. Holster with a mag attached to it, dedicated for appendix carry, is coming.
Tell them how good they fit.
Well, hey, you got to finish the rest of the design before we blow your head up here.
Mm. Tell them how good the one fits.
Hey,
yeah.
The chubby boy over here hasn't worn one yet, so let's...
They are pretty
easy.
We're putting yours on a test rig.
They are pretty legit.
Easy.
And I
don't
won't
tease
go into
like that.
All of the features of them, but... I'm very likely to personally wear one and take the mag off of it. You're going to have that ability. It's going to be cool. A lot of people are going to use it for a lot of things. But what we were talking about is you had it all right. As far as design stuff, it's done. Now we're looking at the minute cosmetic comfort changes. You know, we got it engineered where everything works like it's supposed to. Now it's just the fine tuning of stuff, which will take another week or two, you know, just trial and error.
And these adjustments are not even half inch. They're quarter inch adjustments, rounding by 10 degrees more.
Can matter. So we're letting multiple people use them, try them, do different things. But that's the exact conversation we had this morning, is from an engineering standpoint, you guys look at things different because you have to worry about how to make it work, where in my mind I know how I want it to look and just make it work.
It's the engineer architect. Yep. Form follows function.
Yep. So one of the edges was,
it was fine, but it wasn't perfect.
It wasn't blocky. I felt like it was what every other holster company would do and stop there, in my opinion. It just wasn't finished. So our exact conversation was, yes, it works, it functions 100%, but if you just sit that holster right there, it does not have the curb appeal at all.
It's not Muddy River.
Yeah, it's...
And I was like, but you know what? As soon as we went in and made that change, I was like, damn, that thing looks good.
Because no matter what, people are going to spend whatever they spend on a holster, they look at it on the counter, website, whatever. Their first thoughts are not how good it fits, because they can't tell. It's how good does it look?
Yeah,
it can work great, but if it doesn't look good, they're never going
to
buy it.
It goes all the way back to our very first episode where I talked about going to the gun show in Tulsa, and I seen one of our holsters laying on a table, and that's what the expectation is. When somebody just puts their eyes on that holster, they know it's a Muddy River holster, and that's important to you.
It's 100% important, because to me at this point, I take it personal because, and I'm not going to bash anybody, I'm not saying anything, but so many holsters look the same for whatever multitude of reasons, mostly because they're buying the same trim passes and stuff from somebody else. But If you told me, yeah, your holster looks like everybody else's, that'd be a slap on my face.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, when did we go to that level? You know, we didn't build this company off of being like everybody else.
And speaking of which, and I don't want to get it too far into, but I'm excited about these sidecars or appendix or whatever we're going to call them. Mm-hmm. We didn't do the, I'll call it the easy way or the cheap way, using this bungee or paracord or...
I can confidently say there's nothing on the market that compares to what we're about to release.
The mechanism, how we hold together, get our hinge in there is...
Bungee cord works because it's cheap. We're going to sell these for the same or less than everybody else, and it's going to have about $25 more in just parts than everybody else's.
Yeah, it's a complex part, but we did it because it's right. Yeah. We didn't do it because it was cheap or it was the easiest.
To doing it once and doing it right. You don't want to be the emails we get every day of, well, we bought one from there, but we'll never buy them from there again. We want, whether you like it or not, we're going to be completely transparent with you and everything. That way you can call us a lot of things, but we ain't going to ever lie to you. So we're not going to tell you every holster works for everybody. Appendix carry isn't for everybody, but the guys that like appendix carry are going to love this holster.
And I think we're going to sell a lot of them too, to people who don't even appendix, that are going to like them so well, they're going to use them for insides.
100%. It gives you, it's the first one on the market that's going to give you versatility to not try to sell you another holster. Instead of, if you're an appendix guy, this will give you the opportunity to have a holster that you can use just like you could have this one or the appendix holster. Instead of, oh, buy the appendix holster, and oh, if you want to carry 4 o'clock, go buy another one.
All right. We're getting way too excited.
All right. So by the time this airs...
Just because you can't appendix carry doesn't mean we can't get excited.
Can't or haven't tried yet with this new holster.
Survey says,
hey, if we can make Brett appendix carry,
oh, we should.
We just like hit the lottery.
All right, you're a new guinea pig.
I told you, I haven't tried one yet.
All right, so I got one for you at the shop. Let's go. All right, that was pretty good in depth review of Inside the Waistband holsters.
I will say, if anybody has any, we haven't thought once about the name of this new holster. Because that, it don't matter to us. We want the product to be right. If anybody has any clever names, we would take suggestions for sure.
Where would they send that to?
They can email support@muddyrivertactical.com, or depending on what platform you're listening to this on, leave it in the comments somewhere, or whatever's easier for you guys.
Yeah, and I would say if somebody comes up with a good name for it, you know, we'll give them, maybe just give them a sidecar for naming it for us.
They can have one if they come up with the name.
Excellent. That's a pretty good deal, because those are going to be, they're not going to be cheap, but they're going to be, like you said, they're going to be worth every penny that gets put into them. They're going to get their money's worth on them.
Yeah. Like I said, they're not cheap, but there's a lot that goes into them as far as just not just design costs, but just parts. And we're using things on the market that other people haven't used for these applications.
Adjustable mag pressure plates, or what are those called on the...
Yeah, the adjustable mag retention devices like we got. Those will be built into them. The hinges are something that we've never used or any other holster company have ever used. So it'll be cool.
Excellent. All right. So that leads us to our viewer question of the week. This week, this is one of my favorite questions, and I'm excited as this part as I am about the sidecar holsters, because this is going to be gold right here. But viewer question of the week comes from Big James in Wichita, and he said, what is your funniest hunting story that you have? So I'll go last on this one. Cause
you're so excited. Just go
first.
You're
not going last.
Hey, just go first so that we don't have to listen to you smile.
You don't want me to mic drop on you guys or nothing?
He's going to be over there tapping, ready for his turn.
Hurry up. All right, so I told you last week, one of mine was buying that rifle day before deer season, sighting it in, losing hearing, going Beirut on this deer. And James asked this question. I'm like, thinking through all the funniest hunting stories, and this one isn't mine personally, but it's our grandpa's, our dad's dad, T.O., and he was the guy that was hunting and fishing all the time. And he would go out hunting, and when grandma would start giving him a hard time, when you're going to be back, he's like, well, the more you complain, the longer it's going to be. And he'd go out and be gone for days hunting. So you know, and he was a trucker and stuff like that. Joined the Navy, I think underage during World War II is the story I always heard. And so he was kind of a rough and tumble guy. Well, he always tells the story of, and I think they were going quail hunting. Was it quail hunting or pheasant hunting? Bird hunting. Well,
bird hunting of some type.
So it's cold out, and him and his buddy, they're going to go out, you know, some field, you know, a couple hours away and go pheasant hunting, probably up Maryville, northern Missouri area. So they get up 4 a.m. It's cold out, start driving up to wherever they're going to go hunting. And they had this truck stop that they always stopped and got the trucker special, biscuits and gravy. And these are the, you know, a full order of biscuits and gravy's what, 4 biscuits cut in half, and it's more than all three of us can eat,
more
probably.
More than all of us can eat, yeah.
But, you know, they're going hunting all day, so they're like, yeah, we're going to get the trucker special. So they both get big heaping plate of biscuits and gravy, and, you know, they're truck stops, so they're greasy and, you know, got all the stuff that lubes up the internals and, you know, get you right for the day. So they get in there, and Grandpa, and I think it's, well, I know his buddy wore them too, but the popular thing they had to stay warm on these long walks is they had the coveralls with a hood on them. So they're in their coveralls and they're riding down the road in the truck, and his buddy's sitting in the seat next to him, and he's driving and keeps farting. He's like, but when he's farting, it's coming up through the coveralls that are unzipped and coming out at face level. So they're driving down the road, and he's just getting wafting farts all the way down the road. And he's like, you need to quit doing this. You know, carry my truck, roll the window down. He's like, oh, it's cold out. So, you know, they drive for an hour like this and get out to the woods and start walking. And apparently, during their walk, you know, the parts get, you know, lubricated enough, and that 7:30 express hits. And you know about the 7:30 express?
Mm-mm.
So that's my trademark, 7:30 express, put it on t-shirt. It's, you're sitting out there deer hunting, and every time 7:30 in the morning hits, and you gotta take a poop
when you ain't making it back to the house.
Oh yeah. And you're like, that's when you're cutting off the bottom of your white t-shirt, or you're losing the sock. Like, I started taking a roll of toilet paper in my bag now, because I'm not beyond dumping in the woods at this point in my life. So 7:30 express hits, and the guy's like, oh, I got to run over. So he runs over to the timber line and, you know, pulls his coveralls down and grabs a sapling, leans back, and, you know, lets it rip, right? So they start walking again, and they've gone a couple hundred yards. And my grandpa's like, man, you smell like shit. He's like, you need to quit farting. He's like, no, I did it back there. I'm fine. And so they walk a little bit more. He's like, damn it, I'm telling you need to quit farting. Like, you smell like shit. He's like, I'm telling you, I'm not doing anything. So they're like looking around, and like, he looks on his boots and everything, and he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. It must just be stuck in your nose from all morning. So go a little bit farther. He's like, damn it, I can't take it anymore. You need to go check your pants. You smell like shit. So the guy starts looking around and like pulls down his coveralls to look. And when he pulls down his coveralls, he notices when he pulled them down, the hood of his coveralls was underneath of him. So when he'd done his business, it was into the hood of the coveralls. Oh. So he'd been carrying it around all morning, walking bird hunting out in the field. So note to self, if you go out there, make sure you tuck in your hood when you're doing your business.
That's a good one.
That's a real good one. What about you?
Your turn, Brett.
I don't know if it's really funny. I'm going to not do the one you want me to tell, because that's an embarrassing and dangerous story.
I'm not doing that one either.
Well, maybe it wasn't about you. Maybe it was about a guy you knew of.
Nah, we're going to skip that story. So I'm going to talk about my first time deer hunting. I was 13 years old. I grew up in the city. Never hunted in my life yet. You know, I just didn't have the dad that did that. You know, that wasn't my lifestyle. And my grandpa passed away, left me his deer rifle once. My uncle said, well, if you come down, I'll take you deer hunting. Okay. So 13, me and my stepdad, even though he didn't do any of this, we went through the whole safety course and hunter safety course. We did everything fantastic. Get to my uncle's house. My uncle's like, all right, let me see your gun. He shoots it one time. It's sighted in. You're good to go. Okay. Next morning, we get up at, 4 o'clock in the morning, put all our orange, back in the day with just the orange, like, fuzzy bibs and everything you had, and we're driving out in the middle of the woods, and he just stops at this big oak tree. He's like, all right, get out and just sit down. And I was 13 years old, in the city my whole life. I don't do dark well. Let's just put it that way. I was shaking. everything that I looked at, every log, every branch was a monster coming to get me. It was terrible. The sun finally comes up. There's nothing out there. And I'm just watching. And he's probably sitting in his deer stand 1,000 yards away laughing at me. You just know he is. This city kid's never going to shoot anything. And I turn around and there's these three deer right on the ridge behind me and just sitting there, just barely trotting through. And I look and there's the biggest buck I've ever seen in my life. And I stand up and I'm shaking so bad I can't keep my gun straight. And I just lean my grandpa's Ruger, you know, walnut stock, perfect gun against a tree, put the scope on the deer, pull the trigger, deer just drops right where we're standing. I walk over there, didn't have a clue what I was going to do. My uncle gave me a knife, a buck knife with a gut hook on it and everything. I didn't know what I was doing. So I was like, well, I'm going to walk and find my uncle. So I start walking and he's like 700 yards away across his field. And I go up to his deer stand and I told him the story. He's like, okay, well, let's go get him. So we walk back over the deer and long story short, the biggest buck of my life was a little like three pointer. And, but I mean, it was great. My uncle's face, I couldn't imagine. I wish I would have had a picture of it.
Are you still afraid of the dark?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's afraid of spiders, I can promise you that. Oh, we're putting a tree stand up last year.
Come on, that wasn't a spider. The size
of a quarter. You would have thought Bigfoot was after him.
No, get out of here. That thing came out of that tree. We just got done cutting the tree down.
The spider jumped out of the tree after him.
It didn't jump at me. It just crawled out, and it was as big as my hand.
I thought it jumped.
As big as your
hand. It really was.
The story's changing.
He was deer hunting in the Amazon.
Now it crawled out.
Yeah, down in the Amazon.
He was just there, and Brett seen
it. We're going to make him a holster for his raid bottle.
I'm gonna hide in his redneck blind one morning and him not know it.
Nope.
Put one on a string. Oh God. All right, Kevin.
Yeah, you shouldn't have told me that.
That's rude.
All the times you got to come save me in the dark and the skid steer and stuff, you shouldn't have told me that.
Side story, remember when we went bow hunting with that kid that said he shot the monster and it was smaller than like a border collie and he picked
like
it up?
Like a German shepherd and he had it by...
Yeah,
he picked it up like you'd pick up a coyote. He had this deer by 2 feet like this. He's like, it's the biggest thing I've ever seen.
I think it still had milk on its lips. It was tiny.
It was bad.
All right. I know you got a good one here.
Okay, well, mine's not going to be hunting because I just got to tell this story because it's funny. So it is outdoor related. It would be fishing. So back in high school, Brett Courtright, which will be on the podcast here before long, hopefully. He works for an organization now that does some cool stuff and we're going to have him on. But anyways, in high school, me and Brett did a lot of hunting and left school to go hunting and things like that. Well, we used to go night fishing all the time. Out at Hillsdale. At the time, he worked at like Hy-Vee. He always was like a meat cutter.
Down at the spillway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a meat cutter at Hy-Vee and didn't get off until like 9. So we'd go night fishing for catfish out at the spillway. So this is, I don't know, fifth or sixth time we had been that year. We've been catching a lot of fish. But by saying we, I was catching a lot of fish. He'd never caught that many of them. But anyways, Brett
must be the name.
Brett was always fun to mess with. You know that in high school.
Oh, yeah.
We are always messing with him about something.
Brett's got one of the, well, I don't know about now. At the time, had one of the shortest fuses of anybody I've ever met.
Now he may have grown some, but yeah, he'd get going. So you can imagine the crap I'd already given him the 4 or 5 trips about not catching fish and blah, blah, blah.
Can I interject for 1 second? You have got what they call the damn Mason luck. So anytime anybody has ever went fishing with you, you catch 467 fish to their one. Like when we go crappie fishing, he runs the boat sideways down the bank where he's fishing the bank.
He's trying to act like this is my
fault. No, I'm standing back by the motor. And
I second the fact that it's not luck. He just puts himself where the fish are and puts you away from him.
Yeah, I'm in 30 feet of water and he's on the bank when the crappie are biting. So I'm out there. I couldn't cast and hit the bank from where he puts me. He's like, they're back
finally,
there, too.
I finally will get tired of it and walk up and fish right beside him just because. It's like, no.
He still don't catch anything. He don't catch none, so then he realizes it's not the boat position and goes back.
So I see where Brett was coming from in the story.
So anyways, we're night fishing on the bank. And it's, so we went, like, at the spillway. There's the rocks. We're at Hillsdale. We walked, like, a quarter mile down. And it's like a Y where it wide off. And you'd catch channel cat all night long. And we always kept them and I think a neighbor of his or something, we gave them to, and they would always eat them and whatever. So this was like 4 o'clock in the morning by then. We're getting ready to go home. And I'd caught, I don't know how many, I had a whole stringer full of them, and Brett hadn't caught one yet. So I was giving him crap about it, and he's pissed off. That's why he's ready to go home. He's like, that's crap. Let's just go. So anyways, I'm packing my stuff up. He's getting ready to grab his pole, and his pole starts ticking. So and you'd have to know Brett, but then he gets into rare form about, watch this, I'm going to catch one, and all the crap you've been giving me.
So all his crap talking that he wanted to do all night was saved for this last 3 minutes.
He let her
minutes.
Go in 30 seconds. So this fit, I'm like, man. And I'm thinking to myself, I just didn't say anything because I'm like, hopefully he catches a fish. So I don't got to ride 45 minutes home with him.
Pissed off
even more. So I'm like, okay, this is great. But in my head, I'm like, it's not a very big fish because I've been catching them and they've just been taking it and going. You know, catfish, it's just like tick, tick, like over and over for like 2 minutes. And that's all it was.
So it's never running with it. No. It's just pecking at it.
So like 20 minutes goes by. It stopped doing that. So then he's even more pissed off. He's in really rare form now, ready to just take everything. So I'm like, just grab your pole. Let's go. At this time, it's like 5 in the morning. Like the sun's, you can see the sun's going to be coming up. Like, let's just go. So he reels, starts reeling. And it ticks again. Well, he's like half reeled in by this point. So I'm like, oh, well, what the hell? So it ticks again, but never does anything. So then he lets it sit there. Every time he reels, it'll just tick a little bit. So he's like, oh, yeah, and has choice words. I got one as he's reeling it in. And it's ticking. I didn't even know they were in fresh water. He caught a damn clam. A clam. He reeled it in, and he's like, I got a rock. And I'm like, that's not a rock. I'm like, look, it's, you can see the clam. So at this point, he's pacing back and forth, pacing mad. And at this point, I couldn't help but laugh, which just promoted the situation, but it was too good not to laugh at. He cuts this clam off. He's like, I'm going to show it. And I don't know what he's going to do. It cuts the clam off. And I'm laughing. And then he thought about it and he throws the clam. And then I'm still laughing. I'm just getting my stuff. Next thing I know, I turn around and he's just blah, 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 blah. I'm not paying attention. He javelins his pole into the freaking river. I'm like, what did you do that for? He's like, I ain't never going fishing again. So every time I see him now, I'm like, hey, if you're going to throw your pole in the lake, just give it to me first.
We need to get him one of those like wrist straps like they have on the Wii remotes.
But if there is anybody that was to catch a clam and it not be any more funny, he was the guy.
That one's pretty hard to beat. And we'll have to poke the bear a little bit when we get him on here.
I wish I had video of him. I mean, he paced back and forth for like 3 minutes. He didn't know what to do. He was so pissed he didn't even want to grab his poles. And then he throws the pole. And then I laughed at him the whole way home even more because just the thought of... I mean, think about it. Think about somebody mad and then javelin a pole down the river.
Was that before or after the cell phone when he chucked it?
Oh, that's in the same time frame.
Same time frame? Yeah, we won't get into that one. That's an offline story, but...
Yeah, we may or may not, this was well before my wife. I mean, we were 15, 16 years old. Dating a couple girls from Kearney.
Nebraska.
Yeah, Nebraska. Maybe.
Allegedly.
Maybe Kearney. Yeah, and that's where the other stories came in as far as beer and the phone. But yeah.
But the funniest part of that, and I'm not going to name names, but just the brief synopsis, within an argument at late in the evening, and she started getting on him.
You can just leave it at, you hear a female's voice going away from you.
Saying, Brett!
Going back to javelin the pole, he threw his phone, and all you heard is, Brett! As it's rolling away. As he threw it. I'm like, oh.
Then, didn't she say, did you throw your phone again?
Yeah. And then... after like 30 minutes, he calmed down enough to call her back. And her first words, did you throw your phone again. So then I had to ask him when was the first time he threw his phone. Like, is this normal?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a character, but we'll have him on here.
All right. Well, another great episode, guys. People listening, promo code MRT Podcast gets you 15% off everything on the website and 15% off holsters in the gun shop. So make sure to use that on the website. Anything we talked about today is available on the website. If there's something on the website you'd like us to stock that we don't have, let us know. We may be able to get it, maybe not. If we can't, we'll let you know. If you can get it cheaper somewhere else, we'll let you know that too. So check out the website. Check out, also, we got videos, gun reviews, all sorts of stuff. You can go to the, is it videos and media link on our website where they can find access to all that?
Yep, they can find it all on the website.
And they can find ways to follow us online, other places as well there. If you have trouble finding us, let us know. We'd be glad to help you out. As with everything, thanks for listening. Our music again, we'd like to thank Quentin Cox & Co. for the intro and outro music. Kevin, you want to wrap us up?
Yep. Keep practicing and always be prepared.
See ya.
See you, everybody.